Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to edition 181 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We're also on Future Radio in Norwich and brought to you by our proud partners Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up for the game for free by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist returned Michael Bailey, and we are here at Argent Towers in Norwich to review what was very nearly a Spielberg ending in Austria. In this pod, we will review all the key talking points from the Red Bull Ring, wonder who stepped under more ladders, Lewis or Max, analyse where Daniel Kvyat's breakpoint exactly was, and ask, were the Red Bull Lederhosen really necessary? And as ever, we will also dish out our Of the Weekend awards. Joining us on the pod this week, we have a top panel, budding F1 correspondent Callum Springle, budding F1 engineer, Callum's brother Dan Springle, and NRF1's honorary Scotsman and Kimi Liverlike, Stuart Hodge. Gents, thank you so much for joining us. Much appreciated. How are we all? Stu, are you well?
Yes, should be very good fun.
Oh, that was a rubbish Kimmy.
That was Kimmy, okay, yeah.
I thought I would live like him, try and talk like him, but yeah.
No. Can you drive like him on your scooter?
No, and I failed my test again, so
oh, no.
I don't know. Then again, the way he's driving this year, I suppose you could make a few comments.
He would possibly fail his own scooter test, that's what we're saying.
He might do.
Poor old Kimmy, there we go. Callum, Dan? Brothers in arms. I mean, you're not, but I've heard that. Callum, you've been busy. You've been doing some work experience down at the Eastern Daily Press.
Yeah, it was a busy-ish week, I suppose.
That's the spirit.
Anything you can put on your CV.
Exactly. Apologies if you're following us on Facebook and social media and Twitter and what have you. You know, doing podcasts, we managed to get those out. And must be said, Perry Hamilton, what a job he did last week filling in for me. Absolutely superb. Sterling job. Yes, indeed. Well done, Stuart. Good round of applause. I'm quite sure we will repeat that trick at times this season, especially once the soccer season arrives as well, after Formula One's summer break. So there we go. Dan, how's the racing been going in the old Formula 3?
Yeah, we had a weekend at Silverstone on the Grand Prix circuit last weekend, so I've got my insight ready. Probably shouldn't say too much about Pirelli's up, but yeah, qualified fourth. Then in race one, we finished second behind our teammate again, and third in race three, so, or race two, I should say. So yeah, we're now 17 points ahead in the championship. So yeah, the NRF1 is carrying us to championship victory so far.
Because most importantly, the sticker is still on the side of the car, of Jacopo's car.
Well, there's one on each side of the car.
There's one on each side! I don't think I realised that.
The magic.
Wow! But it's two stickers. I mean, are we putting undue... Is it getting in the way of the aerodynamics of the car? Is it fiddling with the flow?
Well, I did the sticker myself. I applied it myself, so... My extra care. So I'm hoping that my sticker applying skills are good enough that it's not disrupting anything too major.
Just about to sum up our influence in motorsport, but there we go. Right, a quick heads up. This will once again be the first of three pods in 3 days this week. It's obviously slightly different, though, because we're in the middle of back-to-back races. So we will be back with our British Grand Prix preview and British Grand Prix predictions after what this is, which is, of course, the Austrian Grand Prix review. So lots of fun on the way, and I'm sure we'll filter in some of the news as we go along. So Austria, then, it is done. We all took it in over the weekend. Never going to live up to Baku, I think that's fair to say. But it did have an excellent finish. I think the word you used, Callum, although it was two words, was slow burner.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, you can, I suppose, hyphenate them. Technically, it's one word.
Yeah.
Yes.
Grammar lessons. Yeah,
grammar. Love it. It's because he's done a week at the Eastern Daily Press. That's what they do.
He's on point.
But it got there, didn't it?
Yeah, eventually. I think, you know, it was still quite an interesting race beforehand because you had, you know, Hamilton coming through and the whole kind of, I suppose, dilemma of whether or not Ricciardo would be on the podium. But yeah, it was quite interesting to see the strategy playing out between Vettel and Bottas. You know, I think Bottas went quite a bit longer and still somehow was slower on the super softs. So could be a car issue there.
I think we mentioned this, but of a return to something like what I was expecting going into the season. The only difference being that it was Valtteri Bottas that led the race from start to finish rather than Lewis. But yeah, I mean, so far the season's been shaping up to be quite exciting. Although I think, you know, I'm a bit of a fuddy-duddy when it comes to rule changes and DRS and all that. Although I do like the return of the A1 ring to the Formula One calendar. I think the one thing, you know, I hate a lot of these newer circuits, but Baku kind of won me over a little bit. And this was a bit of a damn squib, let's be honest, after all the drama that went in the previous race. But yeah, it was good fun to watch. And I think there was enough there to keep the diehards happy anyway.
Absolutely. And I guess I want to kind of reflect on Lewis and Sebastian Vettel first. And we obviously had Lewis Hamilton's penalty, the gearbox change, wasn't it, before qualifying, which led to an almighty argument on the WhatsApp page about what would constitute pole and what would count, which in the end, I might get your verdicts on that in a bit. So obviously Lewis was hampered from the start, Dan, but actually, if you strip it back, Valtteri Bottas was quicker than him in qualifying anyway, and supreme in the race, really, given he also came under that late pressure from Seb.
Yeah, and in qualifying there was also that, or Roman Grosjean's issue, wasn't there, when he had, I think it was the clutch problem. So we didn't really necessarily find out just how much quicker Hamilton could have gone in qualifying relative to Bottas. So credit to Bottas actually getting a decent banker lap in. Yeah, I think Bottas just did a better job all weekend, to be honest. And then that lightning start as well, which is possibly a touch controversial. I'm still seeing things on Twitter even today going on about what's legal and what's not, and people getting confused over what is and what isn't. So,
well, let's touch on that now, shall we? Because if we were to ask Seb here and now, he'd probably still be going on about how it was a jump start. It was remarkable because literally from the moment the start happened, it was probably a delayed radio message, and he was actually complaining about the start, you know, within probably 0.5 seconds of the start happening. He probably jump started his complaints actually about the jump start pretty much. He was so on it, and he was going on about it afterwards. He was having a bit of the old bants in the green room in front of Valtteri, saying, well, he jumped the start, didn't he, clearly, blah blah blah. But actually he didn't officially, because there was no penalty. They noted it and they moved on. Callum, what did you make of it?
Well, I'm quite happy to take the steward's word for it, because they're the ones that are getting paid for it. They're the ones that have the rule book in front of them, and they're the ones that have the data. I don't really see how they could have got it wrong.
So why are you not so convinced, Dan?
I didn't necessarily that I wasn't convinced.
What is it that is not convincing people?
Well, because they have to factor in like an element of human error and human reaction time. And I think the legal limit was 1/100th of a second or something, in and around. Which I saw on Twitter today, and someone had posted his reaction or his movement was 0.003 or 3/1000ths of a second before the lights had gone out or something.
Didn't they have a graphic of the reaction time that said it was more than 0.2?
It was 2/10ths on the graphic.
2/10ths, yeah.
So perhaps this tweet I've seen is
fake news! It's fake news!
But the thing is that 2/10ths is like a decent human reaction time. So surely that would be a pretty average start.
Yeah, I think it was just that Seb was as well. So he was like, oh, I've done a really bad start. But also, you know what it's like? We've all played the game. You can kind of anticipate when the lights are going to go out. You even get a feel for it. To a degree, I would have said. I don't know what they do with the timings, whether they mix up the timings or not, but you'd get a sense of it, wouldn't you?
I think there's an art to the start that always has been in Formula One. It's changed slightly as cars and tyre compounds and all sorts of things have changed over the years, but in terms of it, if it's not breaking the rules, I don't see what all of the hoo-ha's about. I can't understand why there's been so much made of it. I mean, Vettel's obviously becoming, I've seen in a few quarters, especially after Baku, the Schumacher comparison is becoming more and more pointed by the day. And I think this is maybe just more evidence of that. It's the that uber competitive kind of vibe, you know. But I don't think there was anything wrong with it. And I just, it's one of those things. I'm kind of, I think people need to move on now, you know.
I like it though, because it's kind of mischief making. And as I said, I didn't really mind that he drove into Lewis back in Baku. Not that we're going to go on about that again. But, you know, it's just funny. And, you know, if you can get away with it, get away with it, do it. And of course, we did have some shenanigans. I think people are just desperate for shenanigans. Because what was it? There was, we had, after qualifying, there was this some sort of non-story about Vettel not, and Lewis not shaking hands, wasn't there, at qualifying, which was actually physically wrong, because there was evidence of them doing it. And actually, I thought Seb was pretty, in all the media he did leading up to the Grand Prix and before FP1, he genuinely seemed apologetic, whereas when you saw it written down, you might have been like, well, yeah, all right, someone's written it for you. But in actual fact, when he was talking about it, he seemed pretty genuine about what had happened in Baku and his remorse for it, in a way.
From what I saw, he wasn't necessarily apologising for it. He said he regretted it, but he didn't necessarily actually apologise for doing it.
But he looked very sad in his face.
Are you sure?
He accepted that Hamilton had done nothing wrong, which I think is about as close to an admittance of guilt as you're going to get.
That's probably about as close as you're going to get as sorry from a racing driver.
Well, that's a great point. And I think that was it. I don't think I was expecting him to be that conciliatory, I suppose would be the word I'd pick if I could say it. Although I think I did. I think I said it. Just about did I say it? You happy with that, Stuart?
I'm happy with that. Diction's flawless as ever.
Bless you. We'll be talking about the guth of my beard soon.
Aye, the girth.
What a word.
You forced me to actually say it correctly.
Yeah, I know. It's just been going around saying guff for the last hour.
Guff and girth and...
Oh, dear. And it was kind of symptomatic, I guess, that we had Seb chasing down Valtteri and Lewis chasing down Ricciardo when it came into those final stretches, which was, you know, maybe in another lap or two, those two would have both got ahead of their targets. We don't know. But it was interesting, I guess, seeing how they both had to try and recover situations. And did they do a good job of it? Were you impressed with the job they did? Because they both had to make some sort of gap up.
Yeah, I think with Vettel, you can kind of praise him to the extent that I think since sort of Spain, the Mercedes has pulled ahead. You know, they've brought some fairly radical updates to the car, and they would seem to have paid off for, you know, a couple of tenths or so. But with Hamilton, I think he had a lot of sort of oversteer over the weekend. He was just complaining about the balance, so Friday, Saturday and Sunday. So where the Mercedes was in the black, I suppose, relative to the Red Bull, was in Sector 1. You know, obviously they've got the better engine. I think they had a little bit less downforce as well in terms of the wing. So, you know, if you can get a good run up into Turn 3 and into Turn 4, then you've got a chance. But the Red Bull was just so quick in the second sector that Ricciardo would pull out enough of a gap to not have Hamilton close enough to him in his slipstream to really make the most of it. And when he was close enough, he would either go too deep on the brakes into Turn 3 or would get oversteer in Turn 1. It would sort of spoil the whole lap for him.
Lewis almost said he went a bit easy on Danny Ricciardo. Can't say it. Daniel Ricciardo. It seemed like he felt quite down after the race.
Yeah, he definitely felt down, but I think that's just... Lewis is one of those people that he's not a good loser, which is why he's such a good winner, to be honest. That's one of the things you need as a top racing driver, a top athlete in any sport. But I think he feels it when he doesn't win, and I think he's become that used to winning for quite a while now. He's had the strongest car in the grid for a long time, that it's a strange situation for him to be in. And I don't think he's enjoying the chase. I think he'd rather just be like at the front of the pack all of the time.
Yeah, especially as he's chasing someone in a different car, which is a completely different dynamic, of course, to last year. Okay, rapid fire questions. Let's rattle through these. Sebastian Vettel's got a 20-point lead over Lewis. Who is your championship favourite at the moment?
Sebastian Vettel. Lewis Hamilton.
That's a toughie. Vettel.
I'd say Seb. I'd agree with that. Valtteri Bottas is 35 points behind Seb. So only 15 points behind Lewis. Is he in it?
No. Not realistically. No.
No.
Okay. No, I probably agree. I think the interesting thing with Valtteri is it's consistency, isn't it? We know 6 out of 20 races, he probably is going to be very hard to beat, even for Lewis. But it's the other 14, isn't it?
I think... it's about being adaptable as a driver as well. and I don't think he's the best in sort of different conditions, and some of the circuits which put greater demands on the driver in terms of trying to actually find time rather than sort of the circuit lending itself to just sort of natural kind of braking points and braking zones and stuff. I think that's where he doesn't have, let's call it, the flair of some of the other drivers in the grid. And I'd include, like, Fernando Alonso, for example, in that.
What, doesn't have the flair?
No, no, I'm saying Fernando has... He's one of the drivers that does have it.
Oh, but obviously he's... he's in a car. He's in a car.
Like, what's happening? He should just race in the Indy 500 all the time.
If only they could lay that race on every fortnight for Indy, for Fernando to take it on. Okay, let's get this settled then, because it really did my head in over the weekend, and... So many people, I don't know if we've had a definitive answer. If there is a definitive answer, then please fill me in. Lewis, if he had have qualified fastest, so he was the fastest qualifier on Saturday, but then the penalty was applied, would he have officially had pole position this weekend?
No, he wouldn't. It's as clear cut as that. Because Michael Schumacher, 2012 Monaco Grand Prix, qualified fastest, but pole position goes for the person who pulls away from the race in first place. So after the penalty is applied, he wouldn't have been on pole.
Thank you. I mean, that's what I think. Callum?
Well, that means that Maldonado has a pole position, doesn't it?
From?
Spain 2012. And yeah. I've never seen that stat.
So remind us what happened at Spain 2012.
So Hamilton got pole and didn't have the fuel for scrutineering, so got chucked to the back of the grid. And Maldonado qualified second, so was promoted up to first. But I never knew that was attributed to him as a pole position.
Well, for sake. I mean, and this is the issue, because I know DT knows his stuff, and he was relaying the whole regulations going, look, it's a pole position. To me, I'm exactly with Dan. You can't be on pole position for a race if you're starting anywhere other than first in the actual grid, because that's it. Dan, give us the update.
So Maldonado has accredited pole position at the 2012 Spanish Grand Prix.
But he didn't earn it, because you're not fastest in qualifying.
Well,
that's because... a different debate, though, because, like, he's got a pole, so... Yeah, that answers your question.
Okay, we're not going to get stuck into the whole debate again. You probably won't bring your brother again, Callum. But
next time.
Yeah, he does provide the lift. DT knows his stuff, and I know he was looking at the sporting regulations. Ultimately, if that's how it was handled with Pastor, and we all know Pastor Maldonado is a bellwether for so much of Formula One in terms of rules and regulations, then I think we're going to take that as the end of the debate, and hopefully it'll never rear its ugly head again. Hello. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the NRF1 podcast and gold like you've listened to so far, then get subscribed through your podcast player of choice. You can do that by visiting nrf1.uk/podsubscribe, and you'll find the link for you, be it to iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast, you know all the drills. And if yours isn't there, let us know. Just send an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Right, let's go elsewhere, shall we? Firing up the Spielberg NRF1 pit stops. Red Bull, obviously, we need to stop off at them because they were all wearing lederhosen for some, well, traditional dress, I suppose. But, I mean, are they going to do that at every race? No, it's only because it was their home race, obviously. Max Verstappen, he was unlucky again, but he wasn't angry this time. 5 DNFs in 7 races, Dan.
Yeah, it's getting a bit silly now, isn't it? It's a difficult one because he's so talented, but he can't necessarily show off that talent. And it must be so frustrating for him as well, seeing that Ricciardo has now got 5 podiums in a row. And I think you were saying yesterday that's the most, or tied equal with Barrichello for consecutive podiums of a non-champion.
Is that right?
Yeah, in one season.
Good start.
That's a great start. Well, Callum, that's the interesting comparison, isn't it? That Max is having all sorts of trouble. Most of it not down to anything to do with him. It's just Red Bull's sort of trend that they've had in the past of creating one car that's made of glass and one that works really well, because Mark Webber always used to get that car as well. But it's this fact that Daniel is actually getting himself into good positions. He's getting probably the most out of that car that he possibly could as well. And even though I would still say Max is the better racing driver, Daniel's doing the better job. But can we give him that much credit for that?
Well, yeah, because I think in most of the races, Verstappen would have been ahead. You know, he was ahead in Baku. I think he was, what, third when he retired? Second or third in Canada when he retired, and was right behind Ricciardo on the grid in Austria. So he is definitely showing that he is a great driver. There's no doubt about that. It's just the fact that these issues, and also like the strategy call in Monaco that dropped him behind Ricciardo, it all just means that when you bring it together, he would have been sort of slightly ahead of Ricciardo, but even so, he has done a great job. So he does deserve credit for that.
I've got a couple of thoughts. Firstly, Max was responsible for his slow start, which put him into the position where he got shunted. So that's one point to note from the weekend's race. In terms of him being a better driver than Ricciardo, I'm not sure I agree with that, because you can have outright speed, right? But that's one facet of being a racing driver. There's more to it than that. And I think in terms of the other facets, Ricciardo's the more rounded driver at the moment, no question. However, that does not mean that I don't think Max Verstappen's got a higher ceiling as a racing driver, because I think that boy's got the potential to do whatever he wants in motorsport. But at the moment, I think Ricciardo's there on merit. Yeah, Verstappen suffered from some bad luck, but as I say, at the weekend, he was the one that ended up with a slow start, which got him in that position that he got shunted.
Always amuses me with Formula One, because we've gone on about the what ifs of had Lewis qualified fastest and he was not anywhere near it, so you know, we don't want to get tagged with the whole we love Lewis I feel completely neutral to all of them. Likewise, I love Max, but you know, I think it was Kieran Cousins, I think, who flagged up the fact we were having a bit of a Max love in yet not really rating Daniel Ricciardo. So maybe we've been a bit harsh on Daniel in recent weeks. He'll keep going. As I said, he's on a fantastic run of things at the moment. If you're any kind of Formula One driver, what you need is me to predict that you'll be because that's going to guarantee you're going to do well. So Romain Grosjean, my prediction for this weekend was he would be anonymous. And what he actually did was he picked up P6, which equaled Haas's best result of the season. So he was fairly anonymous in that he wasn't complaining about the brakes, which is something. And likewise, Kevin Magnussen was ultimately quite unlucky. But Haas actually ahead of Renault in the Constructors' Championship, which kind of surprised me.
Yeah, same here, I think. Well, we can put it down to Palmer, really, because Magnussen's had sort of half decent results, whereas you know, Palmer's yet to even score a point, and
he was 11th. He was so close.
11th place.
Yeah, the new Gutierrez.
There you go. Stick that on your CV, Jolyon. Yes, which I guess I haven't got it here, and I feel like we might talk about it in one of the other podcasts, and I think we'll probably save it for them. But clearly, Jolyon is under pressure given the noises being made by a certain Robert Kubica. So we'll see how things develop, shall we? Toro Rosso was the only other one I really wanted to mention. Daniel Kvyat, he is going to apparently be staying on at Toro Rosso. I guess that made that decision before he rammed Fernando up the so to speak, off the start. On Sunday, Toro Rosso have only had 2 points finishes all season. It's only twice has one of their cars come home and scored a point all season. And we all love the livery. And the car itself was supposed to look quite good. Carlos Sainz knows that he's probably going to have to be at another team next year, because he knows he's not going to be at Toro Rosso next year. That's basically what he said. So there's a lot going on there, really, isn't there? And not much of it's very good.
Yeah, I think the fact they've had so few points finishes is partly down to the fact they've got this year-old Ferrari engine. Although
it's a Renault engine.
Or the Renault engine, then, I should say.
1-1, Callum, 1-1. He'll invite you back now. Anyway, carry on. Yeah, because the Renault engine's not much better, to be honest.
So they've got this year-old Renault engine, then?
No, it's a current Renault engine.
No, now you're just having a laugh.
Well, now it's 2-1, isn't it?
You here at the NRF1 podcast have been drawn into the Springle family life, which one day will be turned into its own podcast series. Dan, carry on.
Don't interrupt me this time, you cheeky s***. So, year-old Renault engine.
No,
and then
Renault engine. Get it right.
off.
It's definitely an engine. It's Renault, and it's probably this year. It's definitely an engine.
So they've got an engine in it. Whether it's a year old or whether it's this year's engine is up for debate.
Is it?
It's a current engine. I'm pretty certain it's a year old, but all right then.
Last year.
We will have the answer for this in the next podcast. Just you wait. We'll definitive answer. But anyway, they've got an engine that's not doing them any favours.
We'll have to cut that a bit out now. Because
No, there's no way I'm cutting this out. Sorry. Nice try, Dan. What we'll do is we'll move the debate on. There we go. To McLaren. And Callum, you wrote a blog on McLaren.
I have, yeah.
I haven't read it yet. But it will be up on the website, nrf1.uk. Can you summarise it in 5 words?
I was going to summarise it, but not in 5 words.
8?
Ron Danish, you're a one. No.
He's an absent now.
Basically, it's about the struggles from 2013 up until now. And
it's 4,000 words long.
Well, it's 1,500, actually.
I'm only joking. That was a comment on their struggles.
It's more of an aerodynamic sort of approach than they've actually managed to achieve. Condensing that to 1,500
yeah.
words.
Yeah, so you can read that over at nrf1.uk. We might put it on the EDP website if I manage to do that.
You're getting good exposure now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Oh, give me reaction, eh? Just you.
Am I ever the one to get arrogant? No, I'm not.
Well, no, but you're still like Kimmy.
Take that.
Yes!
You will take
that's,
that.
That's two.
That's a hero, mate.
That's two.
Outstanding. He's just been...
I think they played some of the Baku radio again. I hadn't realised how excited Kimi got when he didn't have the steering wheel and they were trying to wheel him out. Give me that steering wheel. Brilliant. If you can catch that somewhere, do it. It's brilliant radio. Anyway, you guys can follow us on social media, and hopefully over the coming weeks it'll be, well, I can tell you what, it'll definitely be at top-notch level over the coming weekend, because we'll be at Silverstone. 3G reception dependent, obviously, and I'm not banking on 4G. 3G will be fine. But yes, you can follow us on all the social media, especially through the Silverstone weekend, primarily Sunday, because we'll be there. The channels are Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, the handle at the NRF1, or you can visit Facebook is fb.me/the NRF1. And as I mentioned, the website is nrf1.uk, and you'll find blogs, stats, Callum's great blogs, and your race review are all there, or they will be. Our latest prediction league standings, that will be there by the end of the week. Honest to God, because I've done most of the catch-up work, and there was a lot of it. That's all there. Betting tips from Kyle, and all sorts. Right, it's time for the Of the Weekends. Yes, these are the awards we love to dish out. We're going to rattle through them, because I literally have, frankly, not got a clue how long we've been going for. Rodolfo Gonzalez, Driver of the Weekend. Come on, Stuart.
I'm giving it to Valtteri.
Yes, I think you should too. I would agree.
I'm going to play devil's advocate and say Romain Grosjean for not pressing the radio button as many times as normal.
Not being anonymous. Yeah, that's a good answer. There's nothing wrong with that. Dan?
Oh, it's got to be a toss-up between Bottas and Ricciardo for me. Yeah. I think I'm going to go for Ricciardo.
Cool. That's our podium. Lovely.
Galateri. I like it.
Top work. Team? I struggled a bit with this. And this is actually a bit of an awkward one. I don't know. We probably shouldn't keep doing that one. Stuart's pointing at me to say Callum. So Callum, team of the week. End.
I think these awards, it's not
hang
like...
On, hang on. You're not going to criticise the awards.
It's a particular award. It's not like the driver of the weekend where you actually elect the best. It's a bit like a general election when you just get rid of the s*** one.
Okay.
So I'd say Haas.
Because they were least s***?
Yes.
Okay,
because,
got you.
Like... Because they did have the breakdown in qualifying and they cost Magnussen a points finish with the suspension. So,
to be honest, that is kind of the logic I applied when I'll tell you mine. Dan?
Red Bull for wearing Lederhosen.
We're moving on then. Stuart?
Wholeheartedly forgiving the Lederhosen. Still Red Bull, because I think I've seen a bit of improvement from them recently. I think Ricciardo drove well and it was a good finish by the standards the team have been at times this season. And I think Max's poor start was to blame for him getting shunted, so it wasn't their fault this time, the retirement. So I'm giving it Red Bull.
Beautiful. I gave it to Williams because they were completely shit by the start, but they'd put massive upgrades on the car. Well, that's what I got told anyway. And they kind of, you know, they clearly developed it to the point where they actually had a pretty decent couple of finishes. Did they? Sort of, they both finished in the points, didn't they?
9 and 10.
Well, I mean, that's average really, isn't it? But there we go. That's my nomination. Highlight of the weekend. What stuck out? What sticks out to you now as a wonderful moment from the Austrian Grand Prix weekend.
It's not from Formula One, but from Formula Two.
Okay, no, that's fine. Yeah, yeah.
So, because Davide Parsecchi is one of the commentators, he gets a bit sort of excited, let's say. And at one point, Sergio Canamasas, who we now know as Spanish horse, he basically got sort of, well, overtaken, basically, and wasn't particularly happy about it, so decided to stick his hand up at whoever just overtaken him.
Seb style.
Yep. And Davide Valsecchi just started saying, oh, yeah, I don't really know why, so I'll pissed off, because it was a fine move.
Live on air.
That is some highlight. Davide used to race for Supernova, I think, or iSport, Caterham. I think it was Caterham for GP2 team. So he's raced here. He knows Norfolk a little bit when he was in GP2. So I spoke to him a few times. And my uncle actually used to engineer for him. And he has the strongest punch, play punch, apparently. He will really punch you. So I don't know if when he's co-commentating, he's like, oh, well, I don't know why he's so pissed off and, you know, play punching his co-commentator. Who was? Would it have been Will Buxton or
Alex Jakes?
Sorry,
I wish it was Will Buxton.
Ah, well, there we go. He's a good lad, isn't he, Will? So there we go. Davide Valsecchi, great language, and he's got a f***ing hard punch. Anyway, a slight sidestep there. Highlights, Dan.
Hamilton not being able to match Michael Schumacher's pole record in Silverstone. That one made me smile.
The fact Valtteri Bottas won. Let's go with that.
That was beautiful. Yeah, one of my highlights was David Coulthard slapping Christian Horner on the ass when he went to see him just before the race in his lederhosen. And yeah, that was like, well, okay. I'm also going to flag up the coverage, because now when they have a video, when they've got a camera on, say, Max talking to Christian Horner having failed, you know, having gone out of the race, they'll turn all the audio down and so you can hear what they're saying. It's brilliant. They're properly eavesdropping rather than just going, oh, here's two people talking, but we're obviously not going to tell you what they're saying, because that would break some sort of huge confidentiality or whatever. And now it's like, yeah, you can hear them. Brilliant. Listen in. And also they are still talking, which helps. I just wish someone would figure out how to put a split screen in the coverage. We had the two battles in the last lap. Just give us some sort of split screen about how it's going. You know, so we can follow both of them. And likewise, if you're going to do replays, they haven't done it so badly this year, but if you're going to have half a minute, 2 minutes of replays from the start, just have the live action in the corner, just have, so we can go between the two. They've got the technology. Just do it. They're straightforward. Just do it. And then finally, Daniel Ricciardo's reaction to winning, to coming on the podium, which I think, if I'm right, was pretty much...
Maybe he's doing an impression of a honey badger.
Yeah.
Seeing as he's known as the honey badger.
Possibly. I'd like to have thought he would have used that explanation after. Instead, I think he just went, oh, I was sort of just roaring, really. And I was glad he used the word roar, because it was a roar. Anyway, final questions to wrap this up then, to wrap up the Austrian Grand Prix. Did we enjoy the race? Yeah, it was a question, really. Let's give it a rating. Now, we've only done this since Canada. Canada got 9 out of 11. Azerbaijan got 12 out of 11. And we didn't do any of the ones before that. So, Austria, Dan.
From, I'd say, the middle of the race was a 6 or a 7, but the last, say, 5-10 laps were probably an 8.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to call that 7.5.
I think if Canada got a 9, then this is probably about an 8, maybe.
Maybe the bar's too high. Stuart?
6.
Okay, well, I'd go 7. So I think as an average, that's basically 7, isn't it? Beautiful. Who will have had the biggest smile on their face heading home on their little jet plane?
Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah, Daniel Ricciardo.
Valtteri Bottas.
Oh, well, I saw a picture of him on the plane and he didn't look that happy.
But that's just Finnish people. We've lived, like, through Kimi Räikkönen being a world champion. So, like, surely with that in mind, we've got to, like, set the bar low for happiness with Finnish people.
In terms of Valtteri Bottas, he had a massive smile on his face. Just wasn't quite in comparison to everyone else. Right, I think we're done then, pretty much. 3 pods in 3 days, including our Great Britain preview and predictions. Those 2 podcasts are on their way. They will make the triumvirate. Terrible sentence, apologies for that. Getting excited, of course, we are, because we will be heading off to Silverstone for the race. That's very exciting. Until then, it's goodbye from our guests. It's goodbye from Callum.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Dan.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Stuart.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from myself. Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/NRF1. And thanks to Future Radio. This has been the NRF1 podcast. Halfway is almost upon us. And if we've got the same amount of fun and games on the horizon before the winter arrives, then happy, happy days. We'll be back quicker than it takes Max Verstappen's race to end. Until then, goodbye!
Adios!
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.